Hi there, you're listening to Camille Parle Sexe, your sexual wellness podcast. I am Camille Bataillon, clinical sexologist, and in this podcast, I want to give you la crème de la crème in sexology. With my guest or on my own, we will reflect together on sexuality, human relationship, and every aspect of intimacy to give you the best of sex education. I hope to inspire you in your intimacy and put some glitter in your sexuality. Alors, bienvenue! Hello, hello, welcome for this new episode. I just finished my conversation with Dr. Tara and I can tell you it's an amazing conversation. You want to listen to this. Dr. Tara is a sex and relationship expert, relationship coach, professor and host of Loop Vites by Dr. Tara podcast. She has a bustling social media presence with over 2 million followers across platforms. Her goal is to normalize talking about sex in a healthy and fun way so that everyone can have an orgasmic day. And in this show, we're going to talk about morning sex, sexual confidence and sexual self-esteem are not the same, sexual profiles and 3 tips to become sexually powerful and not forgetting hot mama. So please enjoy the show. Dr. Tara, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I am as well. I am. So Dr. Tara, can you tell us where do you live and how's your day as a sex expert look like?
Oh, I love that question. I feel like when I go on a podcast, people never ask me that. I live in Los Angeles. And usually it's really sunny at this point, but today it's raining.
Ah, well, and in Belgium, usually it's rainy and today it's very sunny.
It's the opposite. Yeah, I'm like, I want a refund for my rent because it's been raining a lot in Los Angeles, even though, like, you know, we're paying the sunshine tax. So yes, I am based in Los Angeles. And what my day is like as a sex expert is I love morning sex, so I usually try to initiate morning sex. And if my partner is in a hurry to like some appointment, then I masturbate in the morning. I'm a really big fan of morning orgasms, regardless of partner or solo. So that usually how I start my day.
Okay, and it's every mornings.
Almost. Like sometimes if I have an appointment at like 9 a.m. Or 8 a.m. where, you know, I'm a late wake-upper. I don't know about you. Do you wake up early?
I woke up around 6 a.m. early work.
Oh my God, you're so responsible. I usually wake up at 8-ish, like 8:30. But if I have an appointment at 8, then I have to wake up at like 7:30, which means I don't really have time to have sex or masturbate. Then I'll do like an afternoon delight. But I would say I love like the feeling, the blissful feeling after I orgasm. So I'd say I either have sex or masturbate daily. So that's kind of my day, apart from, you know, being on a podcast with you, which is an awesome experience. And I was looking forward to it. And then a lot of writing and teaching because I'm a professor.
Yes, yes, right. You're a professor. So just before this podcast, because we're recording when it's 10 a.m. your time. So you just add the masturbation or sex, right? Like you have this sexual energy.
Yeah. That's why I have so much energy.
Yeah, this is what I was telling you offline. Like when I watch your Instagram, like you have so much energy, you know, and you were telling me it's either people love it or hate it. Uh-huh. Why? Why do you think, you know, it brings so much of a love or so much of a hate?
You know, Beyonce once said this, and I love it. It has stayed with me forever. Beyonce said, you know, you're that bitch when you cause all this conversation. And so to me, you know, when I get a response of, oh my God, I absolutely love this. This is fucking hilarious. Or like, I learned so much, or you make me feel better about myself. I absolutely love that reaction. But then, of course, anything that comes with that, there's also the flip side of the coin where someone's like, you're repulsive, you're corrupting the youth, you're, you know, a nasty woman, you must have a nasty vagina. I'm like, my life is fucking incredible, so none of these comments mean anything to me. So feel free to try, but I usually delete these comments because my philosophy is I don't want any negativity in my home, and my social media is my home, so I remove them.
Yeah, we're going to go back to your social media presence, but you were just saying like you're also a professor. What do you teach? as a professor? Yes.
So at Cal State University, I teach three classes. I teach sexual communication, which is like sexuality and how communication functions for our sexuality and relationships. The second class I teach is relationships, so like relational communication. And then the third class I teach is actually statistics, like quantitative research, sex and statistics. Yeah, so quantitative research. And it really has helped me become a much more informed researcher and an expert in general, because if you don't particularly understand like quantitative research methods, maybe when you read academic like peer review papers, you might not understand the methods truly, which is fine too. Like you can read books, you can read, you know, Psychology Today and become someone who is very knowledgeable as well. But as a professor, I think it serves the students better when I understand the research methods.
Wow. Yes. And you're so right. And do you have like in your mind, like the latest study research that you've read and was like, oh, wow, it blew my mind, or something that you have in mind?
Oh, my gosh. So I conducted a 5,000 participant study. That was actually the study that I talked about on my TED Talk. And it's the topic that, you know, comes up a lot on when I go on podcasts is sexual self-esteem. And it's actually from that study.
Okay. And what did you discover?
Oh, I discovered a lot. So the main purpose of that study was to understand what are some of the individual behavioral practices or individual intrapersonal, like psychological systems that affect long-term sexual satisfaction. Ooh. And I survey people who have been in a relationship at least 1 year. And I asked them about all kinds of things. I asked them about, you know, their sexual mindfulness practices, the ability to be mindful during sex. I asked them about their sexual confidence level, sexual self-esteem. I asked them about their general feeling of confidence. The survey was really long, so I asked them about a lot of things. But what I found, basically, the juice of what I found is, based on this study of 5,000 participants, I found that there are three strong predictors of long-term sexual satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, tell us. Is it like the thing, like, I think I know because I think I did my research. Is it one, do a regular intimacy and relationship check-ins with your partner?
Yes.
Two, write each other an adoration letter? Is it this? And the third, use technology and nonverbal communication to show intimacy.
Yes. Wow. You should be my TA. These are the practices that influence positively on long-term sexual satisfaction. The three variables that are about ourselves, like that predict sexual satisfaction, are our sexual mindfulness, our sexual self-esteem, and our sexual communication. So these are the three like internal variables that predict sexual satisfaction. But the three practices that you shared, those are the practices that enhance sexual satisfaction.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Interesting. And so this is what you can do as an individual person, but also with your partner.
Right. Yeah. Those are powerful practices that not just my research found to be effective. You know, there are other research that found those practices to be effective in various ways. I love reading studies from the field of positive psychology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like you can study psychology and you can study really deep, dark shit.
Yes.
Right? Like there's a lot of deep, dark stuff. There's like trauma and, you know, like mental illness and all kinds of things. But you can also study positive psychology, which
happiness.
Is something I love more. Yeah.
Yeah. Both are important. Both are important.
Both are extremely important. Yeah. Yeah. So the first variable that I found to be a strong predictor of sexual satisfaction is sexual mindfulness. And that's the ability to stay present and non-judgmental during sex.
Yeah, I completely approve. And my sessions are based on mindfulness approach, because my master's thesis was on this sexual mindfulness, you know, being mindful about what you're doing in general in life. But, you know, as you know, like, research showed a lot of benefits if you are mindful, you know, like, you can be more connected into your body. You can know what you want, what you don't want. If you don't like right now the way he touched you or the way she talked to you, then you can readjust. But if you are not connected into the present moment, into your bodies, and you can't adjust.
Oh, 100%. That's so well put.
And I wanted to come back also, you as a professor, and you will tell me if it's different in America, but in France or in Belgium, where I'm based right now, we had like kind of an issue also with being, for example, a psychologist or a professor and being on Instagram or on social media, right? Mm-hmm. Or you have to show that you have you are a serious person, you know, like you are a professional, etc. And I was wondering for you, you know, in your video, you are always in a sexy way, sexy dresses, being like super cheerful and spreading all the knowledge and information that we need. I was wondering if, you know, like, what kind of feedbacks you got from your peer, you know, from colleagues, if it's, you know, if people are welcoming to that, or they are like kind of trying to shame you or say something that is bad you do. So I'm just wondering, because, you know, in France it's a bit a touchy topic.
Oh, I bet. And, you know, I'm going to talk about it in terms of like institutional effect and peer-to-peer effect. So institutional effect, where like the university or my department or my boss telling me like what I can and can't do, I feel very secure and quite protected because I'm tenured. Is there a tenure system in France and Belgium?
I need to check what is it exactly. Oh yeah, because it's a tenure is when
as a university professor, you can, once you work up to a certain point, you apply for tenure, and it's like the university cannot fire you.
It's a good question. I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure. So, but yes, so you are there and you know you have a contract and nobody can't fire you, right?
Right. Cool. Yeah. Like I have the freedom of speech and freedom of practice, like knowledge, how I teach and how I share my knowledge is protected under my tenure. So institutionally, I do know I am protected by the fact that I am a tenured professor. Now, that is a very privileged position, and I admit that, because I know there are many sex educators that are, you know, prohibited or by their position to express like certain opinion or how they express those opinion. So I'm in a very privileged position. So institutionally, I know I'm protected. So I don't really care what kind of, you know, even if like the university president is like, oh, I disagree with the way she behaves. Like, I don't care because they can't fire me. But I haven't really heard anything negative from like my boss or like my department or my college. So I think it's all good. Peer to peer, that's an interesting point, because there's a lot of peer, like, you know, I don't know if I can say like disdain or like disapproval. I think that's a better word, like peer disapproval. And this is not necessarily from my department. This is usually when I go to conference.
Interesting.
Yeah. So my department, there's like about 40 professors. And I think everyone's very supportive of me. Like, they either follow me on Instagram, or when they see me on campus, they're like, "What? Like, you know, like, you're doing so great. Like, nice. We're proud of you." Wow. Right. So my department is great. And they know me so well, like I've been there a long time. So I don't think that they would think I have bad intentions, you know, like I only have good intentions. I want to spread sex positivity and I'm doing it in a radical way. But that peer-to-peer disapproval I often get when I'm at conferences, and conferences are like national and international conference. Last year, I was in Paris.
So it makes sense. It makes sense.
Last year, I was in Paris for the international conference for my field, and there were thousands of people. I remember when it was my turn to go up and speak, you know, there were some people that looked very disapproving or very uncomfortable when I'm speaking. And then afterwards, when I was done from my speech, the next researcher went up to give a speech. That researcher had to do this disclaimer, which I felt like a little bit of a bicker. So that researcher went up, and the first thing she said was, "So my research is nothing like that one."
Wow.
As in, like, it's like better, more serious, or whatever, whatever the interpretation is. But that was the feeling that I got, was like, oh, I'm superior because I'm so serious, you know? And I dislike that so much. I dislike the fact that for women to be taken seriously, we have to be so fucking serious.
That's right. That's right. Yes. To take you seriously, as a woman, to take you seriously, you need to be serious. That's why also in sexuality, so many women can't have fun, have still like this, you know, thinking like, I have to be serious when I have sex. You know, I have this rule of being a woman, having a lot of responsibility at home with the kids, and I still have to be serious in sex. I can't be the funny girl, otherwise nobody is taking me seriously.
Right, exactly. So I think, you know, with my situation, I think it's helpful for sure that, like, I have a PhD and I'm a tenured professor. So I'm like protected in many different levels. So when it comes to like peer-to-peer disapproval, it doesn't affect me that much. It does a little bit, you know, because it's still like, it sucks that you as a woman can't support me as a different kind of woman, you know, that like you expect that I would be similar, that I have to be serious, that I have to be an academic, traditional, you know, so it's a bummer, but I wouldn't say it affects me that much.
Okay. And the topic of today is become sexually powerful. So you have also like this confidence that you're trying to keep it as much as possible. And I was saying, like, you know, saying you have a big social presence, media presence, where you talk about sex in a way that is fun and shameless and sometimes crazy as well, which can, you know, as you're saying, like, could sometimes for some people be like, oh, okay. And I was watching your TED Talk, which is Become Sexually Powerful, where you talk about sex self-esteem. And I was wondering, self-esteem affects, you know, every aspect of our life, right? Relationships, friendships, professional and sexual experiences. And I was wondering, why is this topic is important for you?
Oh my gosh. Wow. Good question. You know, this topic is very important to me because for the longest time, I have had low self-esteem. Mm. And embarking on the sexual awakening journey, I realized that it's me who had to, you know, fix myself. Like, I have to take initiative to improve my own sexual well-being, and that sex will continuously being something that is not enjoyable or almost like a chore if I don't change my perspective of how I view myself in relations to others. Because at the end of the day, like you said, self-esteem affects every aspect of our lives. So sexual self-esteem is a very powerful aspect of ourselves that, like, it's almost like it's hidden. Hmm. You know, before I started studying this topic, I had never heard of the term sexual self-esteem. And even now when I go on podcasts with experts from around the world, you know, the people that I respect the most, some of them still have never heard of the term sexual self-esteem.
Wow.
Because it's just like a well-kept academic thing where people may find it like hard to talk about. A lot of people talk about self-confidence, like sexual confidence. Right? How can you become more confident in bed, right? Like Cosmo and Women's Health magazine have talked about this for like 20 years. you know, but confidence and self-esteem are not the same thing.
Can you explain what are the differences?
Yes. So your sexual confidence is how you exhibit yourself in a sexual setting. So it's external. It's something that people see. Confidence is external. You show up confident. It's external. Your sexual self-esteem is internal and is related to how you view yourself, positive or negative. And it's related to your self-worth. Do you feel like you're worthy of pleasure and connection? Or do you have low self-worth? Do you feel like you have a lot of anxiety because you don't feel like you should be doing this?
Right.
So self-esteem is internal, confidence is external. So yes, there are many things that we can do or mimic to show that we're confident. However, are you truly, you know, confident on the inside? So that would be the question of sexual self-esteem.
Nice. So a person can be a sexual confident, but have a low self-esteem, for example.
Yeah, you totally can. And usually that comes off as, you know, let's say like a guy can have like the most like fit body, right? Maybe a nice penis and like can show up acting like he's confident. But if deep down inside he's insecure and he doesn't have high self-worth, he doesn't think that he's capable, he doesn't feel worthy, it will still come off as like that confidence is fake.
And we all have one friend that is sexy, she's sexy or he's sexy from the, you know, from the physical mm-hmm. appearance. But when you question them, like, I'm always surprised to hear that, you know, they don't have confidence. I was thinking confidence, but actually it's self-esteem. But they are like, you know, with anxiety, they think they are not pretty enough, not doing things enough. And what can cause low self-esteem? What do you think?
So low self-esteem can come from a variety of factors. My research and multiple previous research show that like the first thing is actually negative body image. It's a huge part of how you feel about yourself.
Do you see a difference between men and women? Like, for example, are women have more low self-esteem, or it's, you know, 50-50 kind of, or really depends?
My research found that women tend to have a little bit like lower of sexual self-esteem. And I know why. Like, you know, it's cultural conditioning and all these like magazines and TVs and Victoria's Secret angels. Like, of course, we were conditioned to feel less than, almost, you know, like we weren't conditioned to feel beautiful and confident.
No.
Like, let's say that like social conditioning has been very different for women than men. However, that difference is so small. Mm-hmm. So my research found that there is a difference, but it's small. Okay. So it means that men are catching up in terms of low self-esteem, because for the last, I would say like maybe 10, 15 years, men's bodies, fit bodies, are now a lot more visible on media. You know, think of like Calvin Klein underwear, like commercial, right? It's always like the hottest men with like 8 packs, mm-hmm. you know, like just
six is not bad.
The kind of body that like go to the gym like 4 hours a day and you don't eat. Right. So that type of body and women thinking they're hot, like, have become a little bit more visible. So I think men are also feeling less than recently. Also with the rise of social media, you can compare yourself with so many
yes.
people. So it's definitely like a both men and women thing. So negative body image is a really important factor, like affecting your low sexual self-esteem. Another one is actually like bad sexual experiences and sexual trauma, which sadly a lot of people have. And it's usually due to lack of or no sex education. If kids, like let's say middle school, if kids in middle school, do you guys have middle school or do you
yes.
just go through?
Yes, we have middle school, okay. Like which is college, and then high school, which is lycée. So yes, middle school, yeah. Like when you are about 10 okay. years, like 10, between 10 and 15 years.
Yes, yeah. So if in middle school, we were taught what a healthy relationship looks like, what healthy dating looks like, what healthy sexual experiences look like, then we would reduce a lot more of bad sexual experiences and sexual trauma, right? Because both kids, you know, boys and girls, they now understand what it should look like, and they don't just accept like bad sexual experiences or violence, right? Sexual assault, like, there's research, and my personal belief is that when there's proper education about sexual relationship, healthy sex, kids will grow up to understand what to expect and not what to not do.
Yes. And know when something is not normal, right? Because most of the time it's like, oh, it was painful, it was violent, but this is how it is, right?
Right. Because you don't know.
No, you don't know. And when you watch, yeah, and you watch porn and you think it's a reality, which is not.
Oof. And porn, there's like a lot of violent porn. So it's like really scary when, let's say, you have a 13-year-old son watching porn who thinks like sex means like forcing themselves on women and make them scream and then, you know, just fuck them like you don't have to have any emotions. Like, that's just, to me, it's crazy the fact that we are not teaching kids healthy sex.
Yeah. And let's pretend I'm feeling, you know, like I'm feeling not super, like I have a low self-esteem, you know, low sex self-esteem, but I want to work on that, you know. How do I build my, you know, my self-esteem? How do I become sexually powerful? So, of course, here is not a session, but like, you know, to have the big picture, you know, where do I start? What are the steps for me to become sexually powerful?
3 steps in becoming more sexually powerful is, first, you have to know your sexual profile. So your likes and dislikes and how you enjoy sex and how you express yourself during a sexual situation. Do you want to go through the sexual profiles?
Yes, please.
Maybe we can identify
yours. Okay, yes, let's do this.
This is Dr. Tara's sexual profiles.
Ooh, okay, let's do this.
All right. So the first factor is, are you towards dynamic or consistent? Are you a dynamic or consistent lover? Dynamic means you love changing positions. You love trying new positions.
Okay, dynamic.
Yeah, trying, having sex in different places. Okay, so you're dynamic. So your first profile is dynamic, so D, right? And then second one is, are you towards kinky or traditional?
Kinky.
Okay, so the second one is kinky, so K. So now you're DK. Third one is, are you more monogamous or flexible? Monogamous means like sex is only between 2 people who are in exclusive committed relationship. Flexible means sex can be recreational and it can involve people outside of the relationship.
Flexible.
Okay, so you're DKF. And then last one is, are you more gentle or animalistic? Gentle means you love sweet lovemaking, romantic sex. And animalistic means you tend to prefer like more intense, passionate, rough sex.
This one is hard because I like to switch.
Yes. You know, that's a really interesting observation because I've now done this with like 800 participants. And I found that with this last one, people can't immediately identify because every single person says, I like both. However, my argument is that we can like both. Like, we like, for example, we can like sushi and pasta, but then there's always our nature, something we prefer a little bit more, something more natural.
Okay, so I would say gentle then. I don't know if it's gentle is a word, but
gentle or animalistic?
No, gentle, I will say. Okay.
Okay, so here you are. You are a DKFG.
Ooh.
You are a DKFG. Now your partner or partners can do the same kind of quiz and then see if you guys are sexually compatible.
Nice. And if we are not, what does it mean? Does it mean we should not stay together? Does it mean we can work on this? What's happening?
Yeah, here's my realistic advice. How much effort would you like to put in to this relationship? When I meet a client who's dating, right? It's just dating and is dating around, dating multiple people, you know, have been seeing this girl for 3 weeks, you know, he like asked her to do this quiz. Turns out they're very different. My question to him is, how much of this person would you like to invest in? If you feel like, oh my God, this person is the one, like I have strong chemistry, I trust my intuition. Oh, okay. Then let's compromise and collaborate. It works well with, I have worked with long-term married couples who have different sexual profiles, but you know, they're willing to put in the effort and they want to put in the effort and they work in compromising and collaborating and they're fine. So the question is like, I throw it back to the client. Like, do you want to put in the work? Is it easier if the person is the same sexual profile as you? The answer is yes. The realistic answer is yes.
Because it's less effort, you know, it's more fluid.
Because you kind of already like similar things. Yeah. You know, so that would be something that you have to decide on your own.
Okay, interesting. So now that I did the test, I know I'm a DKFG. What are the next step to become sexually powerful?
Yeah, so the first one is knowing yourself, right? So knowing yourself means like knowing your sexual profile, know who you are sexually. The second step is try to tap into your body. It's what you study, sexual mindfulness. Because mm-hmm. knowing your sexual profile is cerebral, right? It's like cognitive knowledge. It's not like bodily knowledge. Knowing where on your body feels good, what erogenous zones are the most stimulating for you, being more sexually mindful, basically practicing sexual mindfulness. And I have a recommendation if you would like to try sexual meditation.
Ah, nice. So you recorded one?
Yes. So I have a free guided sexual meditation on YouTube. If you search Love Bites by Dr. Tara, it will come up and you can try. I have a 5-minute one and a 10-minute one. I have one that's just for solo and then one for couples to do together.
Okay, I will put on the notes.
You can try sexual meditation because research found that sexual meditation helps increase your sexual mindfulness level. So the longer you do it, the more likely you're going to become more mindful during sex.
Yeah, and it's a practice. So the more you're doing it, the better you become at it.
100%. So that would be the second one. And then the third one is your brain is a super computer and you have to tell yourself every day how great you are. Because positive psychology research found that positive self-talk is way more powerful than any other external validation.
So true. So true.
Right? You can dress very sexy, go to a bar, everybody looks at you. That's external validation. Hey. Do you feel good on the inside? Mm-hmm. Do you truly think you're sexy? Do you truly feel you're capable, intelligent, enigmatic, charismatic, right? All of these things matter way more than people looking at you.
Very true. The words are super important. So what you say about yourself are much more important than when other people. And we see it, you know, in relationship when your partner tells you, oh, you are so pretty, you are beautiful. But they are like, I don't believe it. You know, I don't feel sexy. I don't feel pretty. And he's still giving compliments. But, you know, if you don't feel for yourself, doesn't do much.
That's such a good example. That's an amazing example. Yeah, like your partner, you can be with this person and this person can treat you like the queen and think you're just the most beautiful person. But if you don't feel it and you don't know it, it almost like doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And mantra, positive affirmation, I worked a lot on this during sessions because I really agree with you. It's something very powerful. And even, you know, I use it for myself, you know, years ago, and it really helped me. And it helped me also after having a baby, you know, and yeah. I never felt as sexier after having a baby, which is completely, you know, the reverse of what everyone will say.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I nourish my body, I said mantra, positive affirmation, and it helped. Really?
Yeah, I have a theory. I'm not yet a mother, but we're trying. So I'm excited. And yes, maybe I'll get tips from you.
Oh, yes, please.
But I have a feeling that when you become a mother, if you can tap into it, of course, like some people don't spend the time to try to tap into it. But if you can tap into it, maybe like during, you know, yoga or meditation, just a slow time. Mm-hmm. If you can tap into that source of like motherhood, I feel like it's very sexy. I think mothers are very sexy.
Yes.
It's a powerful thing. You pop a baby out of yourself, mm-hmm. like out of your body, you know? Like if that must feel like the most powerful thing in the world. Like you gave birth.
Yes. And just going through pregnancy and being like, wow, our bodies are just incredible. I mean, so powerful, you know, our body are building a human being and, you know, and welcoming a human being. And yes, my body might be a bit different. And I have the trace de la vie. You can see some signs of pregnancy, of postpartum. But, you know, this is what life is for. Otherwise, you know, if I just stay the way I am since I'm little, it's already over, right? We change our life, right? I'm saying this for new moms, you know, when you are when you transition to teenhood, you can't go back. Your body is changing, right? Even if you don't like it, you have to go through this transition. Your body will never be a kid body. It will be a teen body and then, you know, adult body and et cetera. So you have to accept it. You know, it's for the best, you know.
I would say motherhood phase is probably the sexiest phase.
Let's say it. Yes.
I'm very turned on by mothers. Like when I see, you know, mothers that are thriving, that are taking care of themselves and their family, I just think that's a very powerful woman.
And it inspires you for you, you know, and the same for me, like seeing women like this as well, seeing mom like this really inspired me. And I was like, this is possible. You know, if they can do it, I can do it myself. And it shows me the way of doing it. And it just showed me permission that I can do it as well, you know. So with the steps, can you repeat the three steps that you were saying for building, you know, like being sexually powerful?
Yes. So the first one is understand yourself and know your sexual self more, which is understanding your sexual profile. The second one is trying to understand your body and where in your body feels good. And you can try this through things like pleasure mapping or sexual meditation. Sexual meditation can be a powerful tool for you to enhance your sexual mindfulness level, which we talked about how it's one of the strongest predictors of long-term sexual satisfaction. And then the third one is knowing that your brain is a supercomputer and you gotta tell yourself that you're the best, that you're a sexy woman, you're a powerful woman, that you're a powerful person. Don't want to leave out the men. And that you believe in yourself. And I think that positive self-talk will in turn help you feel more sexually powerful on the inside, which is to me the more important part.
Thank you. Thank you for all those tips. I want to ask you a last question. If people need to just know one thing, like what is the one thing that you would like to tell people about, you know, becoming sexually powerful? What is the one thing that they need to remember?
So because I'm a sexual communication expert, I would say the one thing that I want you to remember is sexual communication is sexual liberation. You can say like, oh my God, I love sex, I feel sexy. But if you're still hush-hush about talking about sex, I doubt that you're truly sexually liberated.
Nice. Thank you so much, Dr. Tara, for everything you shared. I love our conversation. I loved what you were sharing. I finger crossed for your project, your baby project. It's going to be amazing and I'm going to follow up. I'm going to follow your journey as well.
Oh, thank you for having me, Cammie.